Okay, so I'm here today with Dr. Guerin, who is in the Department of Anesthesia. And so his area of interest has changed many times over the years, but at least as far as departments. But I'm going to let him speak right now to talk about his history. And if you can just welcome, if you can just
Thank you.
give us a little story about where you came from, what brought you here, why did you choose to come here?
Thank you. So I graduated medical school in 1995 with the dissertation thesis on red blood cells and water transport. So I applied in several places to continue my research. I never worked as a physician. I worked at the Department of Cell and Molecular Biology ever since I was in the second year of medical school. And then I had the chance to work in Dr. Ann Nicholson's Weller's lab, and she was interested in the interface between the red blood cells and complement. So I was working on red blood cells, she was working red blood cells and complement. So I applied to her lab, and I got the position as a postdoctoral fellow in February 1999.
So when you knew you were coming to the United States from the Far
Romania.
East, from Romania, what were your initial goals leaving there to come here?
Initially, I thought it's going to be just a 2-year training position that will allow me to maybe do better back home. But then once I came here and I saw all the opportunities and especially the mentoring that I received from Anne and Peter Weller, Dr. Weller, who was the co-chief of medicine and the division chief, I decided to stay longer and continue doing research and applying for grants.
And so tell me a little bit more about the mentoring experience that you had. Were they initially welcoming, or was it something you had to prove to them to want them to help facilitate your transition, or at least to become an investigator of your own? Was that something that you knew right away, or did that evolve over time?
Yeah, so I did not know anything about anything. I did not know what the J1 visa is, was an H visa. What the 2-year requirement at home. But then Anne, we had a conversation right at the beginning, and she made it very clear that if you decide to stay longer, you have to understand, she called it situational awareness, where you are in this track, what's asked of you. If she said, if we want to apply for a waiver, so you don't have to go home after 2 years, you need to be productive and write papers and start writing grants because nobody's going to pay your salary forever. And she had a lot of sort of a piecemeal advice, like every week on Monday, you have the schedule for the whole week. And on Friday, we look over to see what you did okay, what you did not so well. And you have to write. And she said, here, you either perform an experiment, you write what you did, or you read. There's nothing else. So you make your own schedule, but you need to know that in the end, what matters are publications and grants. Pretty much anything else is, yeah, not important if you can not show what you worked on. So, and she said that several times. And I have to say that I knew fairly quickly by June, I think that, yeah, this is a there's no time to talk. There's no time to do anything other than experiments, writing, or reading. And she said every experiment has to count for a panel in a figure that is part of your paper that will be one a sub aim or aim of your grant. That's how you have to think. It's all you strategize. And she said, have a calendar and say, I need a paper by that time so we can apply for a waiver. And you work towards that goal. You can't just come to work every morning and say, oh, I don't know what I'm gonna do. Maybe I'll start this project. No, you have to have it very well structured. So
So she was a good mentor, at least initially from a research standpoint. How was your experience? Because clearly you've progressed extremely admirably from a postdoc coming from Romania to a junior faculty to now more senior faculty as an associate professor. Describe to me a little bit how that happened over time. Was it all her doing? Was she advising you both on your research as well as your career? How did that all come together as far as how you progressed through promotions and things?
well, it helped because we had shared divisional lab meetings with Dr. Weller, and we were presenting the data, our results every week. So the questions were, how did you do the experiments? Show me raw data. I don't care for final graphs. And how do you see this in your project for the paper that you work on? And you had to start with, I'm working on this project. This is part of whatever experiment I have to do. And they will say how many controls you've done. And if you think you're going to put this in a paper that has, this is the paper, is this helping you in the grant that you want to write? So I had to write the Harvard Digestive Disease Center, I think 3 years or so after I came here. And then that data were the basis of an R21. So it was staggered. Say the paper, it was a JXMed, and then some JI, whatever. And that was part of the Harvard Digestive Disease Center. And Peter made it very clear that you need a stepping stone. You can't just go for an R21. And he said, let's make sure that your visa allows you. So it was a very sort of a tailored and guided approach. Yeah. So I felt like I knew every time when I was coming to work that, okay, I need to do this because that helps my visa, that helps my little grant, that helps my big grant. And then promotions, I never got a promotion before, so it wasn't front and center, but they said promotions are important because sometimes you are limited of when you want to apply for a grant. If you're not, if you're an instructor or you're a postdoc, you are not qualified, then sometimes you need to be, what's the name of that thing? A resident of the United States. So he said, I cannot help you, but he introduced me to George Peridis, who was an investigator in neurology in Dana building. This is back in 2002, who was from Greece, and he had to go through the visa because being an American, being born here, this is a completely unknown sort of a angle. If you come here, you need to worry about the visa. I think it's just a lot of sleepless nights, not knowing whether my wife almost got deported because there were some issues with the H visa, and you have no idea if you don't know. So having somebody, and Peter and Anne recognize, they said, this is not our expertise, we cannot help you, but before you go to Harvard International Office, do talk to George, who knows this thing, he went through them, and he can sort of mentor you on this angle. So I was extraordinarily fortunate that I had this kind of a guided,
you had like a team of mentors, if you will.
Mentors, yes. And the fact that every Sunday, every Tuesday, you had to present, and it had to be very structured presentation. And you had to say, this is part of this project, which this is the paper. And then towards the end, you had to present the actual paper and how you want to write this, the discussion. And I said, well, that's important for your grant. And when we started having patents, for instance, inventions, they were always said, how is that helping? Do talk to people who are, because they maybe they were not very good at that. So
as a group, it sounds like there's lots of angles that will be very useful for the listeners here about how to navigate visas, how the visa component contributes to the mentoring, and the mentoring has to take into account many different aspects. I guess the question then becomes, when did you realize that you were going to be at least mentored in a way that was going to establish independence? Because I think you mentioned to me in a conversation separate from today, where I believe it was Anne said to you, this is now yours. There must be a point in a transition where something becomes no longer the mentors, and the mentors, and I'm really curious about this, when that experience happened to you. When did you realize I have now become my own investigator, my own ideas are now mine to use?
Yeah, so it started, I think, in 2002 or 2003 when I applied for an R21 and I got the grant. And we published a paper, and it was about calreticulin and some complement receptors. And it was an observation that I made just absolutely by accident. And then we tried to find the receptor, and again, identifying the receptor was absolutely pure luck. There was no intellectual contribution in my behalf. And then I wrote the paper with Anne's help. And then, of course, I put Anne as a senior author because, well, everybody does that. And she said, no, I cannot be senior author. This was your work, your idea, and the idea works. I said, Anne, I've done it in your lab. I'm paid by you. And said, it doesn't matter. If it's your work, your idea, even though you use my centrifuges and reagents, you should be the senior author because that's what it means. So I said, no, I can't have that. Let's go ask Peter. And Peter said, absolutely. If it's not like I had an argument with him. I said, no, Peter, but it's not fair. I spoke with Penny. It was an exchange of ideas. I said, it doesn't matter. You came up with that. You need to be senior author and you start to move towards independence. Because he said, if you're always the first author or co-senior author with Anne, when you apply for a grant, the first criticism you say, is he applying for R-type grants? And he still publishes with his mentor. This is not conducive to, it's just a way for the PI to put money in his lab through a proxy. And first of all, it's not true because it's your idea of you work and you're going to write a grant. And I wrote the grant many, many iterations. And Peter and at one point, Suriname, I brought they would take the grant home, come back, and Sorina asked me, did you write with black or red? Because there were so many. And Peter even corrected the references, which is, I mean, who corrects references?
Well, I mean, it sounds like this was a mentor of all mentors, right? In terms of if you had, in your opinion, to define a mentor, a poster child, if you will, would these individuals sound like that was them?
Yeah. And I looking back, and somebody asked me the other day if I could turn back time and come back again and maybe not having Peter and Anna. I would, because I love being here, but I would be a little bit reluctant not knowing. Because if you don't know, for instance, visa situation for people coming from abroad, it's a huge issue. It's like the backbone. You're staying, trying to perform an experiment, and then in the back of your mind, in September, I may need to pack up everything and just leave. I mean, how can you be under this kind of pressure? I mean, this is
And when did you realize that that was going to change or that needed to change? Was it long after you arrived or was it after you got your first promotion or your first grant?
It was before when Anne and Peter, I can't remember which one it was, I should know, I said, Anne, I have this visa. How long can I stay? A year? I said, I don't know. Go talk to George Peridis. And he was the to-go for this kind of immigration. So if I could summarize that, it was the just luck, because criticizing BI very gently, there was no structure. So there was for postdocs, there was a link at the BIDMC's website. And I looked in 2018, it was still not working 20 years after. And then I had to go to Children's Hospital for postdocs. And over there was very well, I mean, there were like categories. If you have a family, what to do in a weekend. If you have an immigrant visa and a decision tree, you have a J, you have a H, you have a O, you have a whatever. And this is who you have to talk to. And then if you have, because switching, there's a humongous cultural shock, at least it was 25 years ago. If you have issues integrating, please talk to us. BI had none of that. So basically you are absolutely on your own. And if you don't get that kind of a tailored guidance that Anne and Peter, they were like almost like woodpeckers every week, making sure that you are on the track. And just, I don't know how many times I said, I can't figure it out. It's just too much.
And how long after you were here, and hopefully the BI system has changed in 25 years, I'm sure in some ways it has improved, or maybe it's still working on that, but you progressed very nicely through your promotions. Were they all attributed to Anne and Peter in that case? So you went from instructor to assistant to associate, that all involved them.
Yes. And I was saying, I have this paper, and Peter said, these are the, I remember Anne at the beginning, and then Peter, and then were sending me, hey, if you want to go from instructor to assistant, these are the Harvard requirements. Make sure your CV shows all your talks and all that stuff. And tell me when you are reaching it, reach this threshold. And if you think it's taking too long, let's see how I can help you. So with, for instance, study sections or in a complement, because Anne was part of complement, there's a complement, the International Complement Society, she would push me to present, and because she wanted to give me exposure. had she not done that, I would have had almost no chances of having international recognition, because who the hell is going to invite me to Dartmouth? So anyway, so that's what I'm saying. It's almost like.
But it's a success story. It sounds like it's a success story as a whole.
It is, but it's so many things had to come together.
Sure.
And it's.
But it also required dedication on your part. I mean, they obviously had their role.
Anything else? So
right. But you enjoyed the science. You enjoyed the environment.
Yeah.
So if you now that you're where you are and you're still working, and developing your own career, of course, but you've been very successful. I'm going to switch a little bit here. What mistakes did you make along the way? I mean, you described the visa situation. If you were advising, and I always like to come back to this with these conversations, is as now a mentor, because I'm going to call you that. Having learned from what sounds to be mentors of all mentors, what mistakes or what would you say was your biggest mistake that you would have looked differently, but you would have changed along the way? Is there one that you would have said, I wish I had done this or that, or did everything go smoothly all along?
Well,
how did you survive? I mean, was it just because of mentors, or what else did you need?
Yes, I don't know whether. Peter said something at one point. I can't remember. I don't want to misquote him, but he said this kind of a situational awareness to understand when you join a group where exactly you are and how much dedication you have versus how much is required. And I don't know whether I'm here because Anne and Peter really pushed me, or because they gave me guidance and I compensated, because it's almost like a zero sum game. You are being pushed a lot and you have your internal drive, I had a lot of internal drive and just a little bit of, okay, left on right. So I don't know, because especially when writing grants, Anne was hammering me. The grammar is not proper. Well, yeah.
Not surprising, coming from a different country. Yeah. Yes,
and you have to rewrite this. You rewrite this, and I said, and just I don't want to do this anymore. No. If this is gonna be your life, you can't just drop everything. You have a family. You have to think about them. And it was a lot of input all the time. And the fact that for the past almost 25 years, every Tuesday, no matter what, we had to present. I mean, that kind of continuity,
sure,
that tells you that, hey, this is not a sprint, it's a marathon. You have to do this every day.
And did you see that with other postdocs in the lab, or was it you? Were you unique, do you think?
I mean, every single postdoc that I, maybe one or two, but I don't, every single one of them, unfortunately, they all left BI. They are very successful. Whether they went back to Brazil and they all have their own labs now, or back to Israel, or yes.
And you attribute all that to the guidance they received here.
Because it was almost like you're in a mirror room. It was very synchronous. Everybody was doing the same thing. And the fact that we had to present every Tuesday, and Peter and Anne insisting on this structuring whatever you present, this is what I'm doing for this, and here's the raw data. They never accepted sort of a polished graphs, because those are correct. And the discussion, they say, why are you doing this experiment? And Peter had an expression, truthful and unrelated. Yeah, maybe you did this and that happened, but how do you know it's there is a cause and effect? It not just happens to be there.
So let me ask you now, if having had that experience, which I'm jealous, I have to say, do you incorporate this into your own mentoring when you have junior people that come to you for advice or guidance, whether it's experimental, whether it's visas, whether it's promotions, wherever you find yourself? Do you take that type of training that they brought to you and incorporate into your own?
Absolutely. And I try to hammer this in people I work with every day. And I lost Getulia. Unfortunately, it was an exceptional scientist. Now it is a new Eastern University. But what I also noticed, I don't know if it's true or not, I have an N of, I don't know, 5, 6. You can tell people whatever you want, but if there is no internal drive, it doesn't matter.
So do you, at that point, are you honest with them sort of up front and say, this is not for you, or you should
go? No, I can't say
you that. Decide whether they should, I you should guide them towards industry?
I say, in my opinion, this is not working out the way you want it, because you really need to, Anne said, you can spend as many hours as you want in the lab, But rarely, if you want to be, there are 4,000 postdocs at Harvard alone. They all apply for Harvard Divinity grants and all that. If you want to be one of the ones that get grants, you cannot have the schedule of the 85% of that, because it doesn't set you aside. So that's the situational awareness Peter was talking about, to understand where you are and how much effort you have to do. But the fact that you have somebody who's from above to say, you're too slow, this is not, move away from that because it will not leave you, take you anywhere. Try to do this because whatever.
So you try to be more encouraging, but if you realize this isn't just for them because of their
whatever
their own desires and personalities, do you find yourself trying to force the round peg into a square hole, or do you say, here's options for you? There's industry, there's other labs, there's a different job.
I mean, it happened in the past 15 years, maybe with 3 or 4 people. And I said, this is not working out. Let's try again. I usually give them 3 tries. And then I said, I'm sorry, but it's not working out. But it's interesting. I mean, I always doubt that I'm the way I'm saying it, because I looked at Peter and Anne, and I've been with them for like 20 something years, and I don't remember anyone. So maybe it was the pre-selection was better, or their guidance was able to sort of instill that understanding that I don't have it in previously. This is what's ahead of you. You either start this marathon and you cannot let it, you cannot slow down. So yeah, that's so I could say that I like where I am right now, and I didn't feel in any way that I reached this because of my work alone. I think it was 95% because of Peter and I, at least, and their very unique guidance and say, take care of that, take care of that. And Anne used to say, we have money. Money comes, money goes. You can always apply for more grants. We have reagents, maybe unique. We have instrumentation within 500 feet, like very few places on Earth. The only thing that we don't have is time, she said. You waste time, that's not coming back. Doesn't matter how much money you have or instruments or reagents, that's not, so don't waste your time. And
that's what you try and instill in your own students?
Yeah, and she said, if you perform a Western blot, start it at 6 or whatever, you go home, let it go overnight. She said, let the weekend and the night work for you. Don't start it in the middle of the day. Just go overnight. It's better for everything. And so,
did they have equal? I have to ask, just from a, it's sort of this time and generation, this work life balance. Were they the kind of mentors that realized when you needed a break and when you needed to do things outside of the lab, that you needed a life because you had a family? Did they appreciate those sorts of, or at least not appreciate it, but at least mentor you, if you will, on that component of your life? So you have your work life, your research life, your lab, your grants, your papers, but then you have a family and children and other responsibilities. Were they cognizant of that? Did they ever comment on that, or they left that alone?
Well, let me just say a couple of actual examples. When my son was born, my wife got fired. Our visa was not that great, so Anne and Peter said, hey, take your time, stay with your kids and try to. And I didn't get a hit on my salary, and I stayed home for maybe 5 weeks. Then maybe 3 or 4 years later, my mom got cancer. My father had Alzheimer's. So I had to, somebody need to take care of him. So I left for almost 5 weeks and not a paper. I would just say, this is the paper. I would send them updates and say, take care of your family. So many unlikely things came together. So
they appreciated the fact that you were a human being at the basic, that you had other things going on. It wasn't just, I mean, they seemingly were overseeing every aspect of how to make your career a success. And it sounds like that even extended beyond the lab.
I mean, if they had said, no, you have to come in, you have to, and I had those kind of emergencies showing up every now and then, I don't know what I would have done. We tried to go to Parents in a Pinch, or something. No, it's called Bright Horizons.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to get sued by those ones. So for a child, this is 2009. It was $2,100 per month without the food and all that. And who the hell can afford that on a, I was making $48,000 to $49,000. And they said, you know what, just if you need to stay a little bit, just make sure that you are on, do your schedule, weekends, whatever you can. But then, yeah, what matters is the bottom line. Right. How you get there, nobody's going to nickel and dime you on this. No. And if you, like with my mom that has stayed weeks in Romania. No, absolutely. I always just send updates for the grants and papers. And she said, just send my best. And I hope it. And it was also something that I've learned, and I'm telling everybody now, when she was diagnosed with cancer, the culture is, oh, it's going to be fine. Don't worry. I'm telling you, which is complete BS. And Anne would say, I'm really sorry. How can I help? I mean, this kind
that's a human
yeah, it's not like
being, if you will. It's just it's downright
it's not like, oh no, I'm telling you from I mean, how do you know it's gonna be? You have no idea, you don't even know what kind of cancer or something, into I'm really sorry, how can I help? I mean, this is I'm saying the same thing now. If
So have you ever had to, this has been a wonderful conversation. Have you ever had to give bad news to a student as a mentor, to say this is project is a failure, you're not going to need to maintain it, you should abandon it? Has there ever been a time where you've had to deliver bad news? And how, as a mentor, I'm sure Anne and Peter did this, they must have been, maybe not, maybe you've always had a string of successes, has there ever been a way or an instance where you've had to say this project's dead, I've got to move on? Was there ever an instance of that in your...
Yeah, but
or do you just maneuver it a different way?
Usually, because I'm lazy, I would be the same. This is not working. I'm not doing the fourth Western blot because I'm just gonna lose my mind.
Right.
And Anne and Peter will say, "Let's look at the raw data. How did you do it?" And they will just dissect, because they both work in a lab, in a wet lab. So Anne still had until 2000, I can't remember, 1890 or something, a bench in a lab. They said, "How exactly did you do the experiment?"
Right.
Well, you incubate with primary antibodies at room temperature, and then it's all internalized. So by the time you add the secondary, there's nothing.
Right. So there's troubleshooting.
The troubleshooting
for sure. Like, but there must have been points along your career where, or your, maybe there weren't, like I said, where your idea was just, or your, and I'm thinking more of how you would guide a junior person to say this project's not going to happen. We need to revisit this and revamp your goals.
I think it happened. With a red blood cell project with Anne, and the way they framed it when we were looking at the results, it made it look like the conclusion that, okay, this is not working out, let's shoot, was coming from me, because the way the data were flowing,
right?
So
they made you realize
top to back,
that's good, like, that's good, that's great.
Inside outside, right? Say, you know what, I mean, we tried this is a, let's just kill it and forget about fat one and then just move to something else. Right. And
so they didn't direct it. They didn't make the decision. They helped you through mentoring tactics, I would say, to realize what was really the writing on the wall, right?
Yeah. I mean,
you realize it. We're not going to tell you.
You're not going to tell you, but, and also when they knew ahead of time what the direction was, but when you present it, then we had to write on a blackboard or then with PowerPoint how things were, the questions, now that I'm old, I can see how guided is, like,
well, that's a mentoring strategy, right? Say, that's a teaching.
Oh, we can do this. And people say, well, what would you like to do this? Because of this is this, they wanted you corralled into that.
Which was preparing you ultimately to be your own investigator, right? Because at some point you would need to know that. That's why I'm sort of asking the question is, when do you know that you're able to teach that? Because there is bad news, right? The research is, as they say, mostly perspiration and not inspiration, right? Yeah, all that.
99%.
Right. So it's there's tactics of different strategies. I mean, if you had to summarize, because this has been a great, wonderful conversation. If you had to summarize how to be a mentor, how would you describe that in a couple of sentences? If I'm not putting you on the spot too much.
Well, right, like this.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, all I'm doing right now when I'm trying to talk to people like more and all that is basically to recapitulate and to bring 20 years of really like handheld type of guidance. I don't see anything coming from me. I just look back and say, this is what worked with me. And I always try to qualify my advice saying, in my case, this is what worked.
So you bring back experiences that you had, but you haven't necessarily developed your own tactics per se. You must have over the years to say.
Yeah, but it's taken almost like one-to-one at that kind of a, when you present your results, don't just say, okay, so this is the P38 signal. Why?
Right.
What exactly are you doing? And what's the big picture? Is this a paper? And so that kind of, because that thinking, it's very useful to frame everything you do. And when you do it every week, you kind of start to understand your project a little bit better than just, I'm just puppeting up and down.
And you're not one who feeds, you know, the term they use today for parenting, that is. And this is in a strange way, a parenting to an extent, mentoring. They talk about these terms like bulldozing and helicopter, and I'm making sure that the path forward is not met with lots of obstacles. So I'm going to make it easy for you because that's what you're expecting. And that's what a lot of the arguments are about how people parent these days, is that they spend too much time allowing their children to not make mistakes. So in your version of that as a mentor, are you one that says, I'm not going to lay the road easy for you necessarily, meaning I'm not going to eliminate all the obstacles. You need to learn how to move, to walk before you run, right? You need to learn these steps. It's not always going to be easy. I say to my students, troubleshooting is the majority of the time you'll spend figuring out why your experiment didn't go the way you thought it did, why it didn't reproduce from the previous time. So it sounds to me like what Peter and Anne did was to give you the boundaries, but let you figure it out. But they also, with meaning, they supported you from periphery. They didn't make things easy for you all the time. It doesn't sound like they found solutions for you. They helped you, but
I think
they didn't say, "Don't worry about it. We'll fix it
and make the
manuscript read perfectly." They said, "Go fix the references.
Yeah,
go fix the figures."
That's yeah, absolutely. And Peter also said many times that if you handheld somebody all the way, the person will always look at you, help, help.
Right.
You don't want to have somebody like this because you don't want to have a copy. Everybody has its own angle and mind and way of looking at your data. If you corral somebody too much, it's just basically a mini me in the end. You do not, that's not helping. You want somebody who, and I think that's a very fine line between having somebody not making mistakes or allowing him to make mistakes on areas that are not too costly on his or her career. Just to say, okay, I made a boo-boo here, or saying, hey, this is important, you have to hit the deadline June 15th or so, you have to submit the paper, you have to stay up 3 nights in a row. That's not a problem, because that's what's important. So, but I do believe that in the end, a lot depends on the mentoring and having, but not just Peter and Anne, if I may offer a respectful suggestion.
Sure.
But I think the department and the institution has to be behind. I'm reviewing now grants, and you get some absolutely amazing letter from the department chief, division chief, saying this postdoc or whatever. I know it's an R21, an R1, but she's such an amazing scientist. And right. Even if she does not get the grant, the science is solid, the impact, it's there. And if she does not get the grant, we will provide the money.
Right.
So it's not just, because I feel like, again, I can speak for other people, but this was such a kind of a unique environment.
It sounds like your environment you speak of.
Yes, with Peter 100%. And Anne over this.
But it sounds like it, and I think I go as far as to say I'm a believer now that one individual can't, when they say mentor, there should be a different version for that. There should be, it should say, the obvious is plural. There should be mentors, but
Mentor,
there
yeah.
should be a mentoring team, because there's so many aspects of educating and training
No one
that no
person
one
can
person
cover.
can cover.
Yeah,
That's
absolutely.
absolutely.
And I think the involvement of the division and department and actually the institution. So for instance, when I joined the Department of Medicine in 1999, there were divisional lab meetings where we had Dr. Seth Alper, Dr. Zooten cells,
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
Bill Aird.
Bill Aird, right?
Huge groups, a lot of discussion, and then journal clubs with them. And then there were presentation, like scientific presentation, like anesthesia has right now. So you were basically, only if you're not interested in science, you would not gain information every single day. And people were exchanging reagents, microscopes, everything. It was such a busy hub. And you need that to help you. And if you don't, you can't be like a monk coming to work every morning, going to your bench, pipetting up and down and going home, not knowing. And then you find yourself like somebody right now that her visa expires and there's nothing to do.
So maybe the hub system that has been instituted here is a will reinvigorate that. You know, this idea that there's hubs of individuals and expertises, the inflammation, the neurobiology, the cancer, and the metabolism. Maybe those will be the version of what you're describing that will be reinvigorate those kinds of interactions, which I'm a fan of. I think it makes the most sense. I think that's where you find mentors. If you need something, you need advice, career advice, promotion advice, work-life balance advice, equity and diversity advice. You know, those are the instances where you bring those people together. Because, like you said, and I agree, one person can't achieve it all.
So
So,
I think that the institution, and I don't know, I haven't been to the postdoc link at Beth Israel, but you'd be nice. I just joined BI, sort of a, now what? And you click on it and say for family life, for visa, for science, mentoring, career, to be like a decision tree. And the person opens and say, contact this person or something, not just complete silence and just go to your lab,
do work.
do that work. And then you know what? Your visa expires, buddy. That's not that. This, I think, is a horrible way
No,
of
and I think there's people out here
meeting
to
people.
that don't know that as the mentor role, don't realize that those kinds of questions are necessary. And then I think there's a component to this that we're trying to build into the Center for Career Development of how to mentor the mentors, because I think that's an art in and of itself. So Peter and Ann, I would love to know the story that where they came from, right? It's like a tree. Where did they get their mentoring? Why are they the way they are or were? And how can we capture that and use that to train additional investigators like yourself, right? So you're an offspring, so to speak, of their mentoring
Shoot.
approach. Yeah, and a successful one. So continuing to expand that is going to be super powerful for those coming in your lab, and even if you're a part of another mentoring team, you can teach from those experiences. So this has been a wonderful wonderful discussion, and I'm so glad that you were able to join today. I always end these by asking you to say who you're affiliated with, what department, what title, so that I can keep record and people know who you are. So I know you're in the Department of Surgery Anesthesia.
Yeah, so Yonitza Giran, Associate Professor of Anesthesia, Department of Anesthesia,
And you've been here
Beth Israel,
for
24 and a half years.
24 and a half years. So thank you again for coming in today. This has
You're most
been
welcome.
wonderful, and we look forward to maybe hearing from you in the future.
Thank you.